The Blackshaw Arts Hour, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth. Hello, welcome everybody. We're doing what I like to refer to as a scrapbook version of the show today. I'm Ellie and I'm joined by the wonderful Matt Boothman.
Hello, I like to call it Blackshaw Arts Hour Unplugged.
Ooh, nice. That sounds way better. Okay, we're going to go with that. So this is an unplugged episode. You may have noticed, keen subscriber people, that we have had a little bit of a rest on our laurels for the last few weeks. But we're back at it. We're ready and raring. We've got lots of things coming up on the show today. Matt's going to be doing some reviewing, like off of Matt Boothman Does a Film Review.
We're going to do a proper one and then like a whistle-stop tour through some of the releases that we've missed while we've not been doing things.
Exactly, including some of the terrible films that I've gone to see, because when you get a card that allows you to go and see films for a monthly subscription, you feel like you need to get your money's worth, you see terrible films.
It's a thing.
It is a thing. It's a real disease that I have. We're also going to be talking about an exciting theatrical extravaganza that Matt Boothman has seen part one of. We're not going to delve too deep in because part two's not till August, so that would seem a little premature. I'm also going to be chatting about one of my favourite things in the world, television. We're also going to be bringing back one of our favourite things, Fringe Roulette.
Yeah, the Edinburgh Fringe 2017 programme just came out.
That's right.
Before we're recording this, so we can get in on the Fringe Roulette action really early.
Yep.
And if you don't know what Fringe Roulette is, hold on to your pants.
Man,
we'll
you
tell
are
you later.
In for a treat. And you might either wet your pants or rip them off in excitement.
Either way, hold on to them.
Yes. Such good advice here. We're recording today in my flat, which will be something we'll be doing from now on. We normally have much more exciting equipment to play with, but today our equipment is, I don't want to say lacking, but I forgot that Andy's got the essential item that we need, the special magic recordy box, also known as a Zoom recorder. So that's really good.
We should say he's got it because he needed it for Blackshaw's very recent and very successful Some Treachery, A Miss McSkimming Mystery.
That's right.
Which you may have heard if you are a podcast subscriber, and if you're not, you can go back. It's a couple of episodes ago.
Yes.
Yeah. A full-length radio drama recorded live in front of a studio audience, written by Richard Stratton.
With live Foley on the stage, performed by Andrew Crane and David Turnbull. So that is well worth a listen. You can also go and see the photos on our blog. So if you want to listen to it through your ear holes, just go to blackshawonline.com and follow the links to the podcast. Or you can subscribe to the Blackshaw Arts Hour and then you'll not miss a trick. And you can also see the photos on our blog. So if you go to blackshawonline.com, you can see all the behind-the-scenes ridiculousness, including two men carrying a door. What more do you want?
Absolutely nothing.
Say it again. Okay, so I think we should probably dive on in with the film review, the main headlining film review.
The film section.
The film section. Are we going to start with the headliner?
Yeah.
It's not the traditional way to do things, but that's what we're going to do.
The Matt Boothman film review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
That's exactly it. Well done, Matt. Thank you very much. So, Matt, what film have you got to review for us this week?
Wonder Woman! In stereo for your ear pleasure.
My ears are so pleasured right now.
So, I'm almost a little bit apprehensive to talk about this because... it's the first big superhero movie really ever with a female lead. And in the weeks since it's come out, there have been plenty of established man critics on the on the internet and in various publications doing a great job of demonstrating why they are not the best people to explain sort of whether this movie is good, why it's important.
Yeah.
So people may have come across reviews by Steve Rose in The Guardian or David Edelstein on New York Magazine, which were spectacularly tone deaf.
Are they reviews that would make my blood boil?
I imagine they are. I imagine you could look them up if you wanted a little shout.
So maybe before I go into some kind of boxing match scenario, I could read those reviews to really fire myself
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely, yeah, like the equivalent of like Rocky punching the cow.
Excellent. Gonna smack some beef.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
So this is so we've done a lot of comic book movies on this show because we mostly do movies that I have gone to see anyway, and that is kind of my taste.
And we're all big fans of the comic book genre.
Yeah, but we've not done much in the DC Comics stable.
No, they tend to make us a bit sad.
Yeah.
Because they're not that good.
Yeah, we should get Alex on at some point to talk about why he, as a massive Batman fan, loves Batman v Superman.
Yes.
/ Dawn of Justice.
I feel like we'd have to set up an entire episode dedicated to that, because I feel like you've got to delve deep to understand why someone would enjoy that film.
Yeah, and he is a brave man who is not afraid to state his contrary opinion that is a good movie.
Absolutely.
But this is a DC Extended Universe movie, not a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. These are rival stables. It stars Gal Gadot.
Gadot?
One of those things.
I'm going to Google it right now. You carry on.
As Diana of Themyscira, the titular Wonder Woman. So this is a... In the same sort of vein as the first Captain America movie, it's a superhero movie with a period World War setting, except this one's World War One. So Diana grows up on a magically hidden island of Amazons, trained to be the best warrior that they've ever seen. She has inexplicable magic powers. Her mentor and mother are definitely hiding stuff from her about where she came from and what she can do, but they sort of they raise her to be good and to. But Ellie has just put in front of me a very large pronunciation guide. Gadot, Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
So the idyll of the island is interrupted by a crashing World War One pilot, played by Chris Pine, because no superhero movie is complete without a dude named Chris, apparently.
Them's the rules.
Yeah. And he brings in with him knowledge that the islanders have not been privy to, of the fact that there is a world war raging in the world outside.
At which point we assume that time is moving differently, potentially,
possibly,
for them. Or they age slower.
I think it's definitely implied that they all age very slowly or are near enough immortal if they're shot.
Yeah.
So Diana decides that she's going to go out and help. She can't stand by while people are suffering and dying out in the world, and that is kind of her defining characteristic.
Lady's got principles.
Yeah. And so we get a kind of fish out of water sort of narrative, where she's going out into the big wide world that she doesn't understand. She's been sheltered in a lot of ways. So in some ways she's naive, but it's not in a kind of the typical easy way that it could be handled. She's grown up on an island entirely of women, but she's not naive about men.
No.
Because she's read books.
Yeah. She's done a lot of book learning.
She's very savvy about a lot of things.
She is erudite.
She's only naive in that she believes that she has the power to end this whole raging world war with basically a single blow. She's convinced that the god of war, Ares, is masquerading somewhere within the opposing sides and driving the conflict, and if she can just take him down, then all the dominoes will topple and the whole thing will fall.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit, a lot of what it's about is this person with a very kind of heroic take on the world and heroic point of view, learning that sometimes that isn't enough, or learning that people are more complicated than that, and that sometimes people do bad things because, you know, for reasons other than evil influence of evil gods.
Yeah, so she's been brought up with a kind of black and white view of why people do things, and then she meets the people and goes, oh, there's a lot of grey here.
Which leads nicely onto the sort of the look and the look of it and the kind of directorial style. So Patty Jenkins is the director.
So good.
Yeah. And honestly, the only things I can fault in the direction are the things that are a result of Patty Jenkins having to work in a kind of cinematic house style established by the previous movies.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, she has to sort of do an impression of Zack Snyder while directing,
mm-hmm.
which leads to definitely not as much as in some of the other movies, but in some places quite a kind of dark, muddy colour palette where it's kind of difficult to make out what's happening in some places.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff happens at night and yeah. these sorts of things. And a lot of fight scenes that have... So I'm not against slow-mo, but I think there are moments in some of the fights in this movie where the slow-mo doesn't really add anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really serving a purpose. But again, I think that's because that is the style that they've been given, the whole team has been given to work with, rather than, I don't want to lay blame at the feet of anybody who was kind of directly involved in this, really. You've seen a fair few superhero movies, Ellie.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
So this is the first one you'll have seen with a female lead, because
yes.
it's the first one really that there's been
yep.
with a female lead. What? How was it different for you?
Oh, it was so different and so the same, like in a lot of ways. I really liked that it still felt like a superhero movie. It didn't feel like, oh, well, this is a lady version of a superhero movie, which is what I was worried. The thing that gets me is when people are still saying, oh, well, this is a lady film. It's
yeah.
about a lady, it's for ladies. It should just be, it's a film, and that a female being a protagonist is just a by the by. But what I really liked is actually the kind of nods to existing kind of patriarchal filmmaking. So there's a scene where, what's his name? Chris, one of the white Chris's.
Steve Trevor.
Yeah, sure. So Steve Trevor, man with two first names, is... undressing or undressed and being watched in not in a sexual way, but being observed by Wonder Woman. And it's something that happens so frequently in all the rest of the films in the world, where a woman is being made to be an object by a man, the male gaze, and this goes completely the other way. And I thought that was really tongue-in-cheek funny bit to put in.
And it does that scene doesn't play up the comedy of, oh, this is the first time she's seen a naked man.
No, or, she's completely unfazed by
it. She gives him a quick look over and is then like, down to business.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
Tell me about your world.
And she also does make a comment. She says, oh, are you kind of the average man? Like, is this the specimen I am to expect? Like, there's no sexualizing of it. There's no flirting like you would expect if the roles were reversed.
Yeah, she's got quite a scientific mind, the character.
Yeah, she's really logical. And I like the bits where she's kind of questioning strange social constructs that we have and that we expect. And, you know, when they're voyaging somewhere and he's like, oh, no, I can't lie down next to you to sleep. That would be strange and presumptuous. And she's like, why? We both need to sleep. And I just loved the kind of... the constant attacks on gendered society. I thought it was really good. But it all does it without sort of detracting from the action of the film. And it doesn't make it into a big political statement of a film. It's just little touches that make you go, yeah, why do we do that? That is a thing.
Yeah. I mean, overall, it gives you exactly what you want from a superhero movie. It
yeah,
gives you
absolutely.
Sort of the hero that we can aspire to, who is kind of better than everybody else in kind of quite human ways.
Yeah.
Triumphing and sort of learning as they go, and the that little quibble about certain moments of unnecessary slow-mo aside, the action scenes are good. And
so good.
And like the thing that is never in question once she's sort of off the island wading into war, is that she can handle anything that is thrown at her.
Yeah.
And, you know, in any given fight, she is going to come out on top.
Yeah.
By some distance. And sort of the characters that she meets outside the island the ones that get that straight away are the ones that we end up kind of sympathizing with and liking.
Yes.
That end up actually kind of sticking with you.
I love that. I love how readily they accepted that she could just handle it, and how readily they would just follow her lead. There was only a very short, "Oh, we shouldn't let her go out and do that. That seems a bit dangerous." And then they immediately be like, "Ah, she's got it. Yep. Let's just follow on. We can add support here. That's about it."
Yeah, because the trailer made it seem like it was going to be quite a big part of the kind of the character arcs of her and Steve Trevor, that he feels like he has a duty to protect her, and she knows that she doesn't need it. But actually, it's not focused on. He makes a couple of ineffectual overtures to that effect in certain places, and then realizes reasonably quickly that she can take whatever is thrown at her.
Yeah, and then he's just like, she is cool.
Yeah.
I like her, cool.
Yeah, how can I support,
you
know, whatever it is that we're trying to achieve as a team? Obviously, she's got all the fighting. How can I help with my particular set of spy skills?
I also thought it was interesting the way they sort of weave together the two, because they kind of have two separate purposes, really, because originally he just wants to complete this mission that he's on, whereas she is convinced that Ares is the god of war, and that's her mission, to destroy him and therefore stop the war. But there's kind of not too much of a tussle about whether he believes her or not.
Yeah.
And whether he's going to accept the magic kind of element to it. Because obviously he's been on this island, this presumably mythical island, but there's not too much of a focus on, oh, I'm having such internal turmoil about, was this real or not? Did I make it up? Did it happen? Oh, real, not real. And I was glad that they didn't focus on that, because that's kind of boring, because you know that eventually they just have to come around to going, yes, it was, in order for the film to work.
Yeah, the conflict isn't about that. It's about that he feels like he is doing whatever small things he can do towards ending the war, whereas she is fairly convinced right from the beginning that she can strike the single blow that will end it in one go.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of turns out that she's right.
Yeah.
And she can, for a given value of that, and with some complications along the way. But it's less about him believing that there is a literal god of war out there, and more about both of them finding out whether she really can do so much, strike that much stronger blow towards ending the war than kind of any individual, any other individual can.
I really, I kept afterwards thinking, actually, her character's really similar to Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that, obviously, they're from different comic book universes, but the way that they are kind of beings of another world / time, and have then been dropped into a new one. And there's kind of similar elements of naivete and focus on their strong principles. And a lot of the comedy comes from that as well. So I thought that was quite interesting, that it's not something that fell on its face because she's a woman, that story arc could still work regardless of gender. I thought that was really interesting as well.
Yeah. So I don't know whether there's any point recommending the movie, because I think everybody's already seen it.
Yeah.
hopefully multiple times.
Yeah. It's definitely one that I'm going to look forward to seeing again.
Yeah. And the nice thing is it's done well enough that, because as is inevitably the case with, well, not inevitably, but as is tediously the case with kind of the Hollywood finance of all of this, if it had flopped, that wouldn't have been taken as, oh, this was a minor blip, let's do the next one, as it would be with any other movie. It would be, oh, well, that means that lady movies are out.
Yeah.
They don't work. Yeah. There's no market for them. So thank goodness that didn't happen.
Yeah, because it would have given them a false example of how to succeed in gender role smashing. but yeah, I also have to just fangirl for a minute over Gal Gadot, because she is so brilliant. She absolutely kicks ass the whole way through. And I did a bit of reading up on her, because I love her so much. So she served 2 years in the Israeli Armed Forces as a combat instructor. How cool is that? That's so cool. And she filmed a bunch of the scenes. They had to do like kind of pickups of and refilm various bits. She did them pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
She was like
I think
5 months
that.
Pregnant. And she had to wear like a little bit of green on her tummy so that they could like visually cleverly edit out her bum. But she was still like, yeah, I'm going to do all of it. I mean, that's amazing.
Who needs stunt people?
Exactly. And she's just amazing. She's so beautiful, but kind of in a... I mean, it's not relatable, I was going to say, in a relatable way. She looks ethereal, like she looks like another being, but at the same time, like she's just... She's not adhering to all those stereotypes of, I guess, like in the Wonder Woman TV series, for example, it was all like, ooh, I'm Wonder Woman, look at me with my sexy cleavage and my curvy hips, ooh. And that's just not...
Was that the theme tune?
Yeah, did you not watch it? but she just smashes it, and she's just... That when I looked at her, the first thing actually that I thought wasn't beauty, it was strength. Like, she just looks so strong. And apparently she did train for like 6 days a week, 6 hours every day, and trained in swordsmanship, kung fu, kickboxing, what, I don't even know how to say that.
Capoeira.
Thank you. And Brazilian jiu-jitsu. She did all the things. She gained 17 pounds of muscle for the movie. I'm getting these facts from BuzzFeed, so just so you know, that's my source. So, I mean, she's just brilliant. I can't wait for sequels. There'll be sequels, right, Matt?
Yeah. Well, so the next time you'll see her as that character is in the Justice League movie, which is the big, like, DC heroes all team up.
Okay. Is that going to be a Batman person in it?
There will be Batfleck.
It'll be Batfleck?
It will be Batfleck. Okay. There are trailers. You can see the trailers now.
Who's
I think
Catwoman?
I don't think she's in it.
Okay. I think she... I feel like she's been a missed opportunity for ladies in the superhero universe because she seems to always be... I don't know about what the character in the comic books is like, but she doesn't seem to be like a great female role model in the movies.
Well, I think the movies have considered her a kind of poison chalice since the Halle Berry movie.
Yes.
Which, I mean, didn't use the character as much source material. So I think the in that movie, she actually had the powers of a cat rather than just being a burglar.
Oh, so she was like really good at scratching people and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think.
Sure. Was she just like knock stuff off of surfaces while making intense eye contact? Or like when you try and take a photo of her, she just shows you her bum.
Do you own a cat, Ellie?
Is this totally where this is all coming from? Yeah. Did she do other stuff? Like, did she just like wee on your bed for no reason?
I don't know. I honestly haven't seen the movie. I'm getting all of this from the honest trailer.
Does she try and get on top of your kitchen cabinets and in doing so scrabble at their beautiful, somewhat expensive sides?
Don't you just hate it when you find Halle Berry scrabbling on top of your kitchen cabinets?
I really do. Halle, get down! No treats for you. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, no, unfortunately in the Justice League she's back to being the sort of the only lady in the show, unless you count Amy Adams as Lois Lane, who doesn't have any powers.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of dudes plus Wonder Woman.
I do love Amy Adams, but... That's not a superhero role.
No.
Okay, well, that's...
But yeah, I'm sure there will be solo sequels as well.
Yes!
They'd be missing a trick if not.
Yeah, I love her.
Yeah. Oh, actually, no, yes, I did hear it has... But they have greenlit a solo sequel.
Because of all the monies they made.
Yeah, Patty Jenkins is still working out what... She's staying on as director.
Oh, good.
She's just still working out what story to tell with it.
Sure.
Whether she does, like, another sort of... Sometime between... This movie, which is obviously World War One, and kind of the Justice League things that are set in kind of the present slash near future.
Right.
Or whether she does something else.
I hope it's a bit in the past because I like all of the lovely costumes.
Yeah. Nice period design.
I like me some history. Talking of history.
The ancient history of other movies that have come out in the last
few weeks. Well, I was going to relate it to the Fast and Furious 8 movie, which, are they yet setting a record for number of sequels in a franchise?
I don't know.
I feel like they're heading that way.
What that record would be. There must be some horror things that have happened.
Oh yeah, maybe.
I would hope they've set a record for most silly... like punning inversions of the title to try and fit the number in.
Yeah, what was it called in America?
So it was released here as Fast and Furious 8.
Because we won't take any of that nonsense.
in the States, it was the 8 of the Furious.
Like in tech speak off of the early noughties.
Is it wrong that I kind of love that?
Yes, Matt, you should be fully ashamed of yourself.
So,
also, the fate of the Furious just makes it sound like they're just so angry the whole time. They're just referred to as the Furious.
Which is silly, because this one is definitely more about being fast than it is about being furious.
I saw a trailer. Is it the one where like one of them goes off and becomes a baddie and they're all like, oh, why you hurt me so bad? We're family, right?
Yeah, Vin that Diesel's one. A baddie.
Oh, Vin.
Because Charlize Theron has got some dirt on him.
Oh, no.
So this is one of there's this and Guardians of the Galaxy. I actually recorded reviews of, which we couldn't use because to continue the saga of Zoom recorders, my Zoom recorder made it sound like I was in Daft Punk.
Yeah,
I would say
it was like a remix, but a really bad remix. I think you've got some gremlins in your recording equipment all up in there.
So I'll try and remember vaguely what I said, and we'll whistle stop this because we've talked a lot about Wonder Woman.
Yes. Just say things like, it were good or it were no good.
So Fast and Furious 8 is set in a weird alternate universe where anytime any group of people want to accomplish something, it is a given. It is not even discussed at the beginning of the planning meeting. It is a given that the way they will accomplish this will in some way involve driving cars fast.
Sure.
It's not even like somebody in the meeting says, so how will we incorporate driving cars fast into this plan?
They just do it.
The beginning question is, which car shall I drive fast as part of this plan?
I see, yep. I mean, they're on the 8th movie now. They don't need to go through all those requisite planning points, right?
Yeah, it's like, need to steal a nuclear briefcase from a diplomat?
Let me hop in my car.
We're going to have to drive some cars fast to do that. Assault a Siberian military base. Which sports car shall I drive fast to do that?
Sure. I mean, I'd have gone for like a helicopter for attacking a military base, but no cars. Fast car. Okay.
You can use a helicopter or a plane or something to get the car close enough to drive fast as part of the plan.
So you could like helicopter in a car
that's
hanging off of like some big bits of steel string and then just drop the car, but then you just leave in your helicopter because the car's got this.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, so this is the one where Vin Diesel's bad for some given value of bad for some of the movie.
You're making it sound like a Friends episode, the one where Vin Diesel,
is bad for no reason that holds up to scrutiny, especially as it mainly involves somebody needs him for their plan, but only because the plan has to involve driving cars fast.
Yeah.
There would be no other reason for him to be the one that they needed for it.
Because he's really good at that, because he's really streamlined because of his bald head.
Yes, this
is that why
true.
He's best at driving fast?
Reasons to see this movie.
If you like things that go fast.
Yeah, obviously silly driving cars fast stuff.
Yeah.
A ridiculous sequence involving hacking almost all of the self-driving cars in New York. Well, it's also set in a universe where most of the cars in New York are self-driving for some reason.
Okay,
it can be hacked to make them go places.
Are the other films set in weird future verses?
I think as they went along, they've got more. They've split. They've diverged from our timeline as they've gone through.
Is that because they're literally turning them out so fast that they can't set anything in present day anymore because they bypass present day?
Maybe.
They're like, oh no, we've accidentally gone 20 years in the future by writing so many films
so quick.
At
some point, it became a franchise that... It started off as a franchise about street racing, and then it became a franchise that is basically like Ocean's 11 with driving cars fast.
Okay. They've come a long way, those street racers.
Yeah.
They're now like hustling.
But so, the reason to watch this movie is there is this one amazing scene with Jason Statham having a shootout on a plane while trying to soothe a baby in a baby carrying
chair. You are
chair.
Kidding me.
It's one of the best, silliest, most amazing action scenes I've ever seen.
Jason Statham's actually a really good comedy actor.
Yeah, Jason Statham chooses good parts. Like, he knows how to not take himself too seriously.
Yeah. And also, of course, good at driving fast cars because streamlined head.
Yes, another one with a streamlined head. Also, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah, also very streamlined.
Yeah. And it's almost a superhero franchise now. Like, some of the sight gags about how strong Dwayne Johnson is. Like, he can he pulls doors off hinges.
Sure.
He snaps a pair of handcuffs Just like that.
Standard.
Yeah. So.
I mean, they're only made of what, metal?
Yeah. And were presumably put on him to hold a man of his size.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Logic. Yeah, it's such a weird, like, it's gone in such strange places, but I kind of enjoy it a lot.
Well, that's good. It's good that you have that.
Yeah. Okay, so that's that.
Okay, good.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
So Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, you've seen this one.
I have seen it with my eyes.
Yeah, so this is another Marvel one. So we're talking about the Marvel DC thing earlier. This is another Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. One of the things that I'm getting bored of in Marvel movies is the dad angst.
Okay.
Like, there is a continuing theme of people having angst about their dads.
What other dad angst has there been? I can't think of it.
There's lots of dad angst in Iron Man.
Oh, yeah.
There's lots of dad angst in Thor.
Yes. Oh, so much. That's a lot of dad angst going on.
Yeah. Like, general parent angst, but mostly dad angst.
Yeah.
So if you were a hypothetical person who's never seen any Marvel movies and are worried about the tedium of the dad angst building up, but still wanted to see, so, like, this is the one that I would say, if you're going to brave any dad angst, brave this one, because this it actually heavy. Makes a really good story out of it, and does it really well, and has a good, like the emotional hit works even when you're bored of dad angst as a plot hook.
So it's because I feel like, now you're saying this, actually it makes sense to me that the dad angst in other films has kind of always been like, oh, we need to deepen this character, how can we deepen this, oh, I know, let's throw in some dad angst.
Yeah,
whereas this is actually like the whole plot is built around it, and there's such a good lead in from the first film as well, because that's the big question that a lot of people came away with, is, well, so who's his dad?
Yeah, and some really unexpectedly emotionally affecting stuff kind of near the end of the movie. This is the team of misfits in space part of the Marvel stable. It has a lot of the stuff that made the first one popular, including the kind of wacky out there, brightly coloured, sparkly visuals.
Yeah.
It's very sort of cosmic. It's not just because it's space doesn't mean it has to be all dark.
Yeah.
It's lots of sparkly stuff. And it's also kind of the comedy wing of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
They're a lot sillier than the rest of them. And that allows them to... And I don't know how intentional this is on the part of Marvel as a producing house, or on the part of James Gunn, the director, or any of the writers... But it allows them to poke fun at some of the things that Marvel movies are getting a bit of stick for now that there's been enough of them that it kind of exposes the formula. So one of the things that, as well as the dad angst, one of the things that people are starting to get a bit bored of in the Marvel movies is these sort of the last half hour of every movie is a big fight, and it can get a little bit... You can get a little bit bogged down in those massive set pieces when every single movie ends with one. And what Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 does, in a lot of cases, is it shoves the big fighty action special effects set piece into the background, literally in a couple of cases, especially sort of the title sequence.
Yes, the opening of the film.
And focuses on something else that's lighthearted in the foreground, a little bit of interpersonal character bickering or drama or that kind of thing, which I think is kind of refreshing for it.
I think it's a really nice thing to be doing. It's very funny, but also I think it's actually more engaging.
Yeah. So I felt like it retread a little bit of ground in terms of it being a story about the team don't really get on and they have to learn to put aside their differences, which I feel like in a sequel you should have already got past that.
Yeah.
But it does pay off some good character work, especially with... Zoe Saldana's character and Karen Gillan's character,
yes.
The weird cyborg assassin sisters,
yes.
Who are always fighting, and really pays off some of their backstory and gets some of their interpersonal stuff out in the open, which I know that a lot of people, me included, were felt like there wasn't enough of in the first movie. It was a bit undercooked as a relationship, and they obviously heard that and said, let's actually pay this off in the sequel.
Yeah, no, I think that bit was really good, actually.
Yeah. That's
most
of what I've got to say about that.
It's got an amazing soundtrack, obviously.
Yeah, of course. The whole... Is it 80s this time? It is.
Yeah, it's still 70s,
80s. 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Some really weird visual tableaus referencing, but I don't want to spoil it because it's such a fun
moment. Yeah, there's things I want to talk about as well, where it's like, oh, actually, no. But I think one thing I would say in terms of the kind of dad plot line is I really liked that it surprised me. I couldn't predict the way that it was going to go from various points of the film. Obviously, it gets to a certain point and then you're like, oh, okay, so this is going to happen. But it genuinely kept surprising me. And I thought all the characters were really beautifully done, as always. But yeah, I do agree with you that some of the relationships, it felt like they were in a holding pattern.
Yeah.
So I would say Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana's kind of relationship was very much a holding pattern from the first film.
Which actually I don't have much to complain about there, because I don't mind, like, that I'm not really invested in that romance, so I don't really mind it taking a backseat to some of the other stuff.
I almost felt like they maybe put too much in about it. I was like, it's fine if it's in a holding pattern, but you don't need to keep showing us that it's in a holding pattern.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I think I would definitely recommend, if it's still on at a cinema near you, I would definitely recommend going to see it at the cinema. It's good on the big screen. I saw it in 3D and it was a good 3D experience. I did not see it in 4DX, but if that's an option at your cinema, maybe that's still playing in that format. I think it's a good one.
Coincidentally, another Vin Diesel movie.
Yes!
Playing a very different character.
Very different character.
Much less streamlined.
Oh, Baby Groot.
Aerodynamic.
Baby Groot is such a cutie. Yeah. I have to put in a mention for Baby Groot being cute. recommend.
Good. What else have you seen?
What else have I seen? Well, as trailed at the beginning of the show, I've seen some films which, I mean, maybe unfairly I'm classing in the terrible category. They're just films that I would not go and see at the cinema unless I could do it for freezies. They are definitely films that I would wait for Netflix. So one was A Dog's Purpose, which is about a dog and its purpose. Kind of going along the lines of a dog being reincarnated several times. So
it's a bit of a twist.
Yeah, so you see a dog, it's not really a spoiler to say that, it's clear from the trailer, but a dog who is born and then belongs to a little boy and then dies and then goes on to be several other dogs before eventually returning to the little boy as obviously an adult, but in the body of a different dog.
So it's kind of a twist because, like, dog movies are kind of a subgenre.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's a definite trope of those movies that the dog will not survive to the end.
Yep.
And I feel like that's quite a good inversion of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it kind of, in another way, you did see it die like 8 times in the film, which is hard
it's
work.
It's the ultimate dog movie.
I didn't get upset every time it died, because sometimes I was like, yeah, that's fine, I get the pattern now, it's going to come back again in a minute. But there were certainly a few bits like where it was a police dog that was totes emosh. So yeah, if you like dogs, it's a good film. It's not as terrible as it definitely could have been based on the concept of the film. I think it's actually pretty well put together and was very, very touching.
Aww.
And lots of bits about humanity and loneliness that were very poignant. The other film I saw was Snatched, which is the latest offering from Amy Schumer. It's got Goldie Hawn playing her mum in. They make a really great duo. They're very good. I just felt like at points the movie wasn't really sure what it was doing. The kind of premise is they go on a holiday together and then get kidnapped. Again, not a spoiler, that's in the trailers.
Sounds like not usual comedy fare.
No, well, it's kind of edging into that genre of the kind of gross-out comedy that a lot of female comedians in particular kind of want to claim as not being a gendered genre, like, say, Bridesmaids, for example. And I think maybe that just those comedies aren't really to my taste. So there were points of it where it felt like it was going for the gross out, and then points where it was going for the kind of meaningful mother-daughter stuff, or just, like, there was a lot of slapstick comedy as well. It's just a bit of a mashup. And, you know, it was bits of it were funny, but generally it wasn't really going anywhere. So, something for Netflix, I would say. but that's it. That's what I've seen recently. Okay. So,
Well, this has been the Blackshaw Film Hour.
Yeah, pretty much. We had a lot to catch up on. But going back into the kind of the theatre area, our original strand of art, what have you seen recently?
Half of Angels in America.
Yes.
A.K.A. Angels in America Millennium Approaches.
Yeah.
The National Theatre's big revival. This is their big summer production.
It's huge.
Star-studded. Running until late August. It hit the headlines at first for just how long each part runs.
Yeah, it's like 3.5 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, there were stories of people from coming in to see it from out of town, because mm-hmm. obviously it's a lot of big names, it's a great show, it's a big draw, and people having to rush to get the last train home from Waterloo afterwards.
I mean, that was mostly in previous week, though, wasn't it, when they hadn't quite... Yeah. Got the formula down.
Yeah, it was early on.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I kind of don't want to say too much about it until I've seen part two, and I've not seen part two until August.
Yeah.
So this is, a sneak preview, but it was great, and it did not feel like it was as long as the running time.
Yeah.
So if that's putting you off, how long, you feel like it's a slog.
How long is it?
Part one was...
Like, what time did you get out of the theatre?
Going on 11.
Okay. That's totally doable.
Yeah.
And
two intervals, so plenty of weeing time.
Wee time.
Yeah.
Also hydrating time.
Also that.
The opposite of a wee. So what would you say to people? Like, I mean, I know it's pretty much sold out, so we're talking returns or queuing early in the morning.
Yeah,
for their
Friday rush.
Yeah. What would you say to people? To do it or not do it?
Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Do it.
Do it! There you go. Matt Boothman says, do it.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I have my eye on lots of different shows that I would like to book and see, so I'll update you at the next show to see how I've got on with that. That will make me actually get on and go through my to-do list and get some bookings in.
Ooh, I'll hold you to that. It'll make a difference from people holding me to what I've said I'm going to see at the cinema.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay, you can hold me to that. That's fine. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was one of my favourite things, which is television.
What's on the television?
Handmaid's Tale.
So this is the show that people in America got angry because they thought it had been written specifically as a response to The Trump.
The Trump, which is hilarious because, of course, it is based on and very true to a novel written by Margaret Atwood in 1985. So very much not written for the present day, but, oh, so painfully relevant.
If you follow her on Twitter, you can see just how very thrilled she is. The dark future that she predicted is becoming closer to reality.
But that's what's so great about it. I studied it at A-level as a curriculum text and loved it. It is about a dystopian future, but, of course, having been written in 1985, it draws on history. So it's very much this kind of thing of... You know, people never learn lessons from history and how things have gone bad before. And these terrible things inevitably come back around. And it's an extreme version of that. But there's a lot of things in there, particularly because it's been set in basically present day, that are scarily, you know, feel scarily possible. So it's a world in which women have been put back into their gendered position of being... of it being a patriarchal society and it being kind of based on like biblical teachings, but in that very weird extremist way where they've just taken the bits that they want to use. It's set in America. So there's no real indication of what's happening in the rest of the world, other than hearing that some people have tried to escape through the Canadian border, but we don't actually know what state Canada's in. And the great thing about the TV show is that we're getting all these flashbacks. So in the book, you don't really get that. You get the main character, Offred, reliving bits and pieces, but you don't get to literally see it. So to see these flashbacks into what is modern day America, where people are using mobile phones and going about their business and women can say and do and wear what they like. And
buying barista coffee.
Buying coffee, like all the normal things. And then seeing slowly things change and their reactions to those slow changes. So no spoilers really, but the most recent episode saw women protesting against the different measures that were coming in place against them. And the responses to that. And then talking about, you know, why things have got so far without them taking action. So they're saying, oh, well, you know, this terrible thing happened with the government collapsing, but we had to accept that because it was an act of terrorism, and all the things that then happened after that were to protect us. And they've accepted that narrative, and now they're realising that narrative was not true. And it's scary because with all sorts of world events in the last few years, that seems like a feasible thing that, if told convincingly, we would believe.
And it is a scary show. Scary, yes. in that kind of tense way.
Yeah.
The score is helping a lot, but yes. Also just the particular Elizabeth Moss,
mm-hmm.
She's performance amazing. As Offred.
She does so much just with her eyes, because the whole kind of the whole world that they're living in, everything is observed so tightly. Everything is under scrutiny, and so your behaviour has to be absolutely impeccable, or you'll be taken out back and shot, essentially. So she's wearing these very conservative, like almost
like a habit.
Yeah, and it's a lot of the clothes are kind of Amish, I guess. They're mm-hmm. drawing on that kind of dress. So she's dressed very conservatively, but then she's so emotive with her eyes, and it's really hard. It's hard to watch at times, actually.
Very.
Because so much of it is that there's a lot of graphic violence. People should be aware. There's a lot of just a lot of horrible, nasty behaviour.
it uses it gives her a voiceover in a monologue, which is something that can go very wrong. It's a technique that can, like, when it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. But I had a sense in some of the episodes, like, she's doing so much of this with her performance that you can tell when something's bubbling under the surface. But I think part of that tension and the kind of the relentlessness of it, the violence, the sexual violence, you need her kind of genuine voice coming through to kind of break that and show you that there actually is some not levity, but like she's foul-mouthed when she's mm-hmm. when she doesn't have a filter on.
She's funny. She is funny.
And to be able to know that, kind of be under the surface, that she is still able to think like a 21st century person.
Yeah, and that, I think that's the thing that kind of grounds it and makes it so scary as well, is that you've got this her inner voice, which is saying and thinking all of the things that you as a viewer are thinking. And thinking, well, yeah, that's what I would be reacting, how I'd be reacting if I was in that situation. So it all becomes very relatable very quickly.
Yeah. It's the horror of a world where you have to live in your head. Like, you can only be genuine inside your own head. You can't show any of it ever.
And you can't trust anyone.
Yeah.
And seeing how readily some people slip into that world and relish the role they've been given, whether that's submissive or dominant, some people seem to be really happy to live in this weird, controlled universe. There's also a really good performance from Alex Bledel?
Alexis Bledel.
That's the one? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rory off of Gilmore Girls. She's fantastic. Fantastic. And especially in the most recent episode. But there's all sorts of stuff in it that's just getting people talking, which I think is really good, about feminist issues and about making sure that we're all being self-aware and stopping something scary like that happening.
Yeah. Like, it was the time to revive it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very on the nose. You know, I can see why idiots are thinking that it's been written as a reaction to now. And apparently it's already been commissioned for a second season.
Oh, right.
So I don't know where the end of the first season will take us up to in relation to the book. So I don't know whether it's going to be a second season that goes off book.
Interesting.
And how much of a role Margaret Atwood might have in shaping a second season. So that would be really interesting to find out.
Definitely.
So yeah, I mean, I'd love to hear what other people think about it. So if you want to send us some comments on The Handmaid's Tale, then do. And indeed, anything we've been talking about on the show, you can contact us on Twitter at @BlackShortUpdate. Or if you want to target Matt about his reviews specifically to shower him in compliments, he's at Matt Boothman. And you can also find out all of our other contact details, our Instagram, our Facebook, all those other things on our website, which is blackshortonline.com. So we're kind of rounding off the show by having a little play with Fringe Roulette.
The runaway success of this time last year, the breakout feature from the Blackshore Arts Hour.
We've won so many awards in our mind for this feature. So this is where we get a copy of the Edinburgh Fringe Guide. In this particular instance, it is a PDF version. So we're being very eco-friendly. Essentially, we scroll through it. One of us will then say stop and we'll see what we've landed on and tell you all about a thing that's happening at the Ed Fringe that you should potentially check out. So it runs from the 4th to 28th of August this year up in Edinburgh. We are great supporters of the Fringe. We've been several times before. I don't think either of us are going this year though.
No. Having a year off.
But we'd love to hear about any shows that people are doing. So get in touch and let us know and we'll look it up and have a chat about it. So, do you want me to scroll and you can say stop?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to close my eyes.
Close your eyes.
And stop.
Okay. And now I'm going to swirl my mouse around on the screen until you say stop.
And stop right there.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so we've landed on Sister Mary's Playtime. Join Sister Mary MacArthur's comedy and variety show. No pulpit psalms or prayers, she's not that kind of nun. She's got the songs, show business and show tunes. Guests and games for a lull-busting lunchtime lunge.
See, what they've done with the marketing copy there is they've left you questioning because they haven't told you what sort of nun she is.
No, that's right.
Only what sort of nun she's not.
Mm. So, it's free. Non-ticketed. I mean, the just picture is of a nun sucking a lollipop. And I think I don't want to say, but I'm not sure of the gender of the nun.
Okay.
Maybe it's just politest, fluid.
Politest not to say in that case.
Yeah. No, I won't say. So it seems to be running throughout the festival with a few days off. And it's a lunchtime show, 1:15. I suspect it might not be suitable for children, but I'm not sure.
That sounds very fringe. That's what we want out of Fringe Roulette.
Yeah, absolutely.
A sample of some of the most fringe shows at the Fringe.
I am a bit disappointed that we didn't land on the thing next to it, which is the Naked Magicians.
Oh, yeah.
I've
heard good things.
Yeah, they seem to have good reviews. That is definitely 18+.
Yeah.
That's my cat. I'm so sorry.
She's weighing in about the Naked Magicians.
She is. I'm not sure whether that's a positive or negative review, but there we go.
Two meows, two stars.
So do you want to scroll and I'll stop?
Sure.
See what section we end up in.
Okay, I'm not even going to show you the screen.
Okay.
Just yell out.
Okay. Keep going.
I'm going.
Keep going.
I'm not
going
to stop.
Okay.
Not until you tell me.
Okay then. Stop.
I've stopped.
Now do a mouse swirl.
Gunge! Okay. A show with Gunge in it.
Well, that would be disappointing if it didn't have Gunge in it. Misleading much.
By Lee Kyle and Salt and Sauce Promotions.
Okay.
Lee Kyle and Pals bring the brilliant game show for kids and stupid adults back to the Fringe.
Is it like Get Your Own Back?
It looks like it, yeah. Okay. It looks like that. That's Continue. The vibe. It's got a bald man in the picture. It's not Dave Benson Phillips. Okay. He is a white bald man.
Okay. Disappointing.
You don't have to bring your offspring along, but don't pretend you love them.
Okay.
I'm having trouble parsing that sentence. It is comedy. It's at the Stand Comedy Club. It's only on five dates, 5th, 6th, 9th, 11th, 12th.
So if you want to get Gunge.
Yeah, £6, £5 concession. They do a family ticket for £20.
Okay.
If you don't pretend you love your offspring.
Yeah, I don't, the copy maybe needs work, but that sounds like an interesting concept.
Yeah, and I appreciate the Ron Seal quality of the title.
Does what it says on the tin.
Gunge! Exclamation mark, a show with Gunge in it.
Perfect. So I'm going to do one more.
Okay, I would like to clarify that these are not necessarily recommendations or endorsements of particular shows.
They're just mentions, really. because, as you can tell from the random method by which we select them, but it may be over the coming weeks we will have recommendations for you. So I'm scrolling, I'm scrolling.
And stop.
Okay.
And swirl.
I'm swirling.
And swirl.
I'm swirling.
And continue to swirl.
Okay.
The roulette. I want to bet on black. Keep swirling. Okay. And stop.
Okay. I've stopped on The Catman Curse. Whirlwind comedy in which refreshingly innovative theatre stands shoulder to shoulder with slapstick and psychedelic surrealism.
Ooh.
Three ex-footlights balance a cartoonish narrative with playfulness and improvisation to tell the story of a bizarre mystery. And that is happening at Bedlam Theatre. And it's running pretty much throughout the festival at 8 o'clock in the evening, £8, £6 concession. That sounds quite interesting.
Sounds all right.
And I think it's in the 2-for-1 deal, which is always worth a punt. Yeah.
Footlights are usually reliable.
Yes. So there you go. There's the three that we've mentioned, but not necessarily recommended to you today. That's our Ed Fringe roulette.
And we'll be able to do this in ever more technologically advanced ways when the app comes out.
The
app is not available yet.
I find scrolling much easier just on a phone than on a computer.
Definitely.
That's why we only got to the comedy section, because we couldn't scroll fast enough. So, next time, Matt Boothman, what might you be reviewing?
So, I want to do Baby Driver next.
Yes.
Which is the new movie from Edgar Wright, written and directed by Edgar Wright of Cornetto Trilogy fame.
Yeah, we watched the trailer before the show.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
It looks good fun. It's about, I think, bank robbers, a gang of bank robbers.
Some kind of cons on.
Particularly their getaway driver, who has severe tinnitus and listens to music all the time.
Yeah.
But is an amazing driver.
Yeah.
And there's lots of car stunts in it.
And it's got, it's Ansel
Elgort.
Elgort playing that lead person.
And it's got Kevin Spacey and Jamie Foxx and John Hamm.
Yep. And lovely, wonderful Downton lady.
Yes.
I'm going to Google her right now. She's great. I really like her.
Who plays, is it Rose? Lady Rose?
Yeah, yep. And she was also Cinderella.
I kept trying to place her and I kept...
Lily James.
I kept thinking she was the actor who played... She looks like the actor who plays Shelley in Twin Peaks. Back when Twin Peaks was first on.
Ah, right. So couldn't be her unless she could travel through time. Sash didn't ever age.
Yep.
Good. Well, this last couple of minutes has been like talking with your grandma, so we'll we'll end on that note. Thanks for listening. We will have lots of people probably on the next few shows. We will be bringing you Alex and Strat Do Art. We will be bringing you...
The long-awaited return.
Yes. We'll be bringing you probably some of Vicky Weston's Arts Thing of the Week. We'll be bringing you Ed Fringe Roulette right up until the festival, so you can look forward to more of that. And Bat Movement will be reviewing that very exciting sounding film.
Baby Driver, hopefully. If it's out in time. If it's not, I might have to do The Mummy.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. With Tom Cruise. So that might be interesting.
Or I might just do The Good The Mummy movie with
Rachel Weisz. Yeah, that is a good film. I mean, that would be very retro. Maybe you could compare them both.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Would that count as a protest review?
It would count as a more interesting review, probably, than just reviewing the most recent release of The Mummy. But there you go. If you have any feelings on what you think Matt should be reviewing and in what format, then feel free to let us know. If you want to get in touch about anything we've talked about on the show or suggest things you think we should be talking about, you can contact us in all sorts of ways. Just go to blackshawonline.com. That's it. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Bye.
Good night.